the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Golf Podcast. This is episode number 215. I'm Frank. As always, I've got Mike here with me. And today we're going to talk about how you guys can score better by avoiding the big mistakes. This is it's a great topic. It's one that I'm excited about. It's one that I've kind of come across in my own just research, just trying to feel like, how am I going to get a little bit better this season? And so it's just kind of, when I first started diving into it, I immediately started texting Mike. I'm like, Mike, I got something I got to talk about on this show, because this it makes a lot of sense to me. And just the way that I've heard this put just kind of really rang a lot of bells. So I'm really excited to talk about that. We've got kind of a great tie-in. We've got one article that I want to talk a little bit about, because like I said, it ties in perfectly. One of our writers, Eric Benzenberg, who always does an excellent job breaking down some really sometimes specifically and very detailed, whether it be concepts or equipment. He breaks that down on Golficity so well, and just the perfect timing. He talks about this idea that it's possible that a lot of us, our obsession, he calls it, with distance is starting to hold us back. And that was largely prompted by some of the responses we had from our Epic versus our Rogue review, which we talked a lot about. We covered it on live. We talked about it on the show. So I won't dive too far into that, but that you can view that on our YouTube channel. And in general, that's this culture where we're getting so obsessed with distance. And Eric makes some great points about that could possibly be holding you back, because there's other things to focus on. We're going to dive more into that, how it relates to today's topic, in a second. But Mike, I just want to talk about in general some of the stuff we've got coming up, because there is you and I have entire meetings now just to go through our calendar.
I know.
It's crazy, but there's so much great stuff coming up. And I think it's also because we're kind of trying to pack it in, because it's just been so, it's taken so long to get warm.
So you're looking forward to that?
We're recording this. It's April 18th. It snowed here again yesterday. I'm so sick of saying that. But when it does get a little bit warm, it got a little warm here on Saturday, and the tee times everywhere were booked solid because everybody tried to get out there. But we've got the things on the book. We're going to get out there. And one of the things we've got coming up, this par three challenge, I can't wait for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be doing that at my home course. I've been playing here forever. In the past 2 years, they've redid the course. They extended it. And as part of that, they took some of the holes that they did away with. They had this big space in the middle, and they made this really awesome, really challenging par three course. So we're gonna have fun with that. We're gonna be shooting some more of those commercials. That was, you know, that kind of like fun side of it that we got to do for leading up to Bay Hill. And I know a lot of you guys request us do more of those, because, you know, just like these really quick, short 30-second fun little ad lib clips that we did. I'm looking forward to that. But then we've got some other big stuff. We've talked about this before. We've been incredibly excited working with Titleist. We're going to get a chance to go down to which course are we going to be at for this TPI fitting, Mike?
It's at Sleepy Hollow in Westchester.
Oh,
yeah,
man. I mean, forget about it. That's another bucket list course. But we're going to get, and if you guys, I'm sure you've heard with some of the excellent things that they do at TPI. I mean, we're talking like it's pretty much as detailed as you can get. And we're going to do a full bag fitting. We've done very specific fittings. We work with some of the best club fitters over the last 8 months or so. It's been incredibly enlightening. So I think this is a great transition in being able to step it up and doing one more thing and going through that full bag. So I can't wait for that. That's going to be a big, exciting one. We're also going to be playing Pound Ridge again, which is something we did maybe it was 2 years ago. That's on the schedule. So much stuff. Make sure you guys are following us on all the different social channels. It's at Golficity, because we try to put those quick stories when we're there. But also, as we're going through this, we're trying to bring you guys with us as much as we can. And by doing that, just making as much content out of it as possible. We're going to be capturing a lot of interviews as part of this for the podcast, but we're also going to be videoing this, and we're going to be putting that on the YouTube channel. So make sure on YouTube you subscribe to the Golficity page there. But speaking of playing, you snuck out there, Mike, right?
I was able to do it during the heat wave on Friday.
The one day heat wave.
That one day heat wave. It was actually like 60, but it was on Friday. But that was a heat wave. It was much
very warm for us, right?
It was much warmer on Saturday. But hey, I was out there Friday, and I was kind of beaming off of the last round I played, which was, it's funny, it was actually exactly 1 month. We played that round on March 15th, and I was out there on April 15th playing again. So that round I'm referencing is that Grand Cypress round where I played really, really well. You know, I think I had like, I don't know, 7 pars, 2 birdies. The stats were off the hook. I was putting lights out. We talked about it extensively on the show. And I was, you know, I had the confidence, Frank. I stepped up to the first tee, and I just couldn't actually get going. And I remember I was running a Snap story that day, and I mentioned this on there. I said, I just can't seem to get going off the tee. You know, the same thing happened at Bay Hill. It took me, I was on hole 5 that I settled down with that, or hole 4 when I settled down with that, that green regulation. And then the next hole I birdied and then parred. So things were starting to go. So that kind of happened again here. I didn't start to wake up until the 5th or 6th hole. Not sure why. I'm going to pull a quote from Tiger here and say, I didn't have a good warm up. You know, I didn't have a good warm up. Maybe that's it. So, but no, I wanted to talk. I highlighted 3 big mistakes that I wish I avoided, which is kind of going to take us into tonight's topic. So real quick, just want to talk about them and then get your feedback on them, and then we'll talk about the topic. The 3-wood on hole 2. Okay, so par 5, reachable. It's like a short par 5. Okay. You can get there in 2. You can get there in 2. I hit a beautiful drive right down the middle. I think it was maybe 260, 264, something like that, if I remember. And I think I had about 210 left. No, I'm sorry. I had about 240 left because I said, I'm going to take out this new 3-wood that I have, and I'm going to hit it because I've been hitting it pretty well. I can get there with this club. And I waited, for the green to clear, which was maybe my first problem, first mistake. You know, when you wait for the green, it literally took about a minute and a half for the green to clear because the guys in front of us were walking. So my group was just waiting, like, are you really going to go for it, dude? So sure enough, I top it.
Yep.
Now, I should have took my 7-iron. I should have took a 9-iron. Basically, I should have took any other club, even a hybrid. I would have hit up to maybe 30 yards off the green, and I could have chipped up in regulation. So that was a huge mistake because that kind of set the tone for the next 2 holes. And then moving on real quick, on the 4th hole, it's unbelievable. 8-iron. It was like 168-yard par 3 with water on the left, nothing on the right at all. And I aim left because I'm so confident in this little fade that I have with my irons. Everything is pushing right a little bit. And sure enough, I settle down. My tempo was perfect. My swing was flawless. I hit it dead straight into the water. So
where was the pin?
The pin was dead center of the green. And I said,
there's
let me
no
aim a little bit towards
you should be aiming for that water.
Yeah, that was a big mistake that I wish I avoided. And then last gap wedge on 9. So this was interesting. I boomed run right down the middle. I had 100 in. I felt rushed getting up to that club. I didn't do my routine, my practice routine, and I sculled the approach shot over the green, and I ended up bogeying the hole. So that 100 in, you know, you need to be there. You need to be in the middle of the green no matter what. So those are 3 mistakes right there. That could have changed everything. I mean, I did play much better on the back 9. I did settle down a little bit, but you know, I got to figure out how to avoid these things.
Hey, 3 legitimately avoidable mistakes too. I mean, the first, that gap wedge, we've talked about, we did an entire episode on the importance of the pre-shot routine. It's no different. I always make this analogy. It's no different than a basketball player making a free throw. If they were to step up there and not go through their normal routine, their chances of making it go down dramatically. The routine is such, it sets the rhythm. It sets your mind. It sets so many different things. It puts the body into that just execute mode. So that can be a big thing. And a lot of times when we feel rushed, that's the first thing that goes. But I always say, like, even if you're pressed for time and you're not trying to hold up the people behind you, you can start your pre-shot routine or whatever, you know, a little bit of it while you're waiting on somebody, you know, in your group to go or whatever it may be. So there's always ways to make it happen. And as far as that, yeah, that's just kind of a Murphy's Law thing with when you wait for them to clear the green and then you just kind of duff it, you know, because you just in so many ways, you just, it's a hugely mental thing. But I want to dive into that more in a second because that is a perfect example of eliminating the bad shots and how that can make a huge part of your game. But that fade, I think that's the one that would eat me up the most because
that killed me.
Yeah, because I mean, anytime I'd say you're aiming, actively aiming for a hazard, you're just asking for trouble, because when your body actually does what you want it to do and sends the ball towards your target, it's almost like you're giving yourself a negative reinforcement, because now at that point you've actually hit your target and it's the wrong target.
The wrong target.
And the reason why I ask where that pin is because even with your normal shot shape being that fade, even if you aimed at the pin, you know, if worst case you unexpectedly didn't hit your normal shot shape, you'd actually be in great shape because you would have went right at the pin.
Right.
And otherwise, if you did, you would have faded and you probably would have been on the right side of the green putting down, you know, putting towards the water.
Right.
You know, but I always hesitate to have that situation where you see anybody taking aim at something that's a hazard or trouble. It's no different than if somebody has a big slice and you see them aiming at the woods on the left. You know, it's like, yeah, you're flirting with disaster there. You know, I'd rather see you aim for the left side of the fairway, and then in worst case, you end up on the right rough. But in this case, worst case is a much worse case, you know,
right.
It's that you're going to be out of, you know, in the water, out in the woods. So, but look, there's not some of that's just being out of practice. As we talk about, we always say knocking off the rust, you know, that's something that you just got to do with that.
Yeah, but there's only so long we can hold on to that.
It's true.
Excuse, you know, in August, I'll be knocking off the rust.
Yeah. well, this year, we almost have an excuse. We feel like we don't get started until August.
I know. True enough. True enough.
Yeah. All right. So listen, there's a lot to talk about with that. I want to talk, you know, I really want to dive into this concept. And there's a few things that I learned recently, again, conceptually, that we can do to improve our scoring by focusing more on eliminating bad shots versus trying always this like hyper laser focus we have on hitting great shots. And I'm going to show you why in percentages and talk about a few different scenarios that make sense with that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Eric's article, which is a perfect, you know, kind of sidebar to that, where he talks about this obsession with distance and losing focus on some other really important things. But before we dive into it, I want to just mention again, because I've just been really excited. I am so amped to get these new Vokey Design SM7 wedges in my hands. When we go down there and we do that fitting that we talked about down at the TPI, you know, that we're going to be doing at Sleepy Hollow not too long. I am so excited for this. And I really want to nail this point home, because again, you know, we get so focused often on other clubs like drivers. I've seen too often that you have your mid and higher handicappers who just kind of think of wedges a lot of times as this secondary thing that you're so focused, as I said, on like the latest driver that came out. And the evidence of that, look on YouTube, look at the videos that get the most views. It's always whatever the hot button driver is at the moment. But we've talked about it so much, about how much of a difference 100 yards and in can make and how much more of a difference to your game just having the right wedges can really do. So the new Vokey Design, the SM7 wedges, they're some of the best looking wedges I've ever seen, and they feel great playing with them. I've demoed them extensively, and honestly, it might be the best wedge on the market. Hats off to Bob Vokey and his team, you know, for bringing the most advanced wedge design ever, right, Mike?
Yeah, you know, totally. And here's the deal with the Vokey SM7s. You're seeing the guys on tour playing them.
Yep.
You know, we all know how amazing the R&D is at Titleist. I mean, we know that. We don't have to explain that. Titleist provides tour validated technology, which offers all of us golfers complete confidence. Here we go from 100 yards and in. I just talked about that big mistake I made. You know, and who doesn't want that confidence? You know, and so Vokey wedges, they offer progressive center of gravity, spin mill grooves, and not to mention, like you just said, it's pretty much one of the coolest looking clubs out there on the market. And you know, you see a Vokey, shiny new Vokey wedge in someone's bag, it's a killer looking club. I've talked about this. I've struggled with spin control, precision shots, getting closer to my target for more of those one putts. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I miss my targets from 100 in, which leads to those 2 to 3 extra strokes. That's how important your wedges are. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm super excited to play with these. I'm definitely going to be a game changer for sure.
It is. And I had so much fun with, and I know you did too, but just poking around with that wedge selector tool on Vokey.com. You know, get this, you enter your handicap or your average score if you don't know your handicap. And then there's a handful more questions like what kind of divot do you know, take on a full swing? And not only the questions, I really like the little graphics that really help you kind of get a better idea of like, yeah, this is me. Like I'm a sweeper or I'm a digger or I'm more neutral. But after you answer the questions, boom, right there, there. It tells you the suggested grind type. It really takes a lot of that guesswork out that I think really is what kind of intimidates a lot of people when it comes to selecting wedges. They're not quite sure when you hear things like grind and bounce and stuff like that. But I know, Mike, you took the test, right?
Yeah, just took it. It's 8 questions long. It took me about, 35 seconds. Basically, it spit out the exact degree loft wedges that I play now. So it kind of picked up based on those questions of what my game is like. And then the cool thing, it told me what grinds, the type of grinds I should play for my Vokey wedges. So I believe that the gap, the pitch, and the 56 were all F grinds. Yes, F grinds, and then the 60 degree was something different. I have the printout over here. But I thought that was really neat. I mean, I know the guys at the TPI are going to tell us the same. We're going to go through the same thing. But the fact that we all can do this right at our computer, it's really cool.
And for free, yeah. So if we're just for the heck of it, give it a try. If nothing else, you'll find out are you playing the right grinds. So check it out. That's Vokey Wedges by Titleist. Know your letter, hit your number. Okay, so Mike, the topic tonight kind of got inspired. I was poking around a little bit on YouTube. There's a lot of great, YouTube and golf vloggers out there that we follow, especially as we get deeper and deeper into doing this ourselves. And one that this video that just popped up and really sparked my interest, and I want to dive into it deeper. And I'm going to link to this in the show notes, which you can get to by going to golfficity.com/episode215. So if you're driving or if you're at the office or something like that, you can always reference back and find this video later and take a look. But the channel is Scratch Golf. I'm kind of new to it, so I don't know everything about it. I just kind of happened across it. But the video title, if you want to just search it on YouTube, it says, "I've realized what it takes to shoot level par." Now, this particular guy, he's just been vlogging his experience, working his way towards scratch. And there's a lot of great takeaways here. And I want to talk about the main one, the most important one. I'm going to pull up my notes here because I had taken a couple notes as I was watching it. A couple of things that he says, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing him in a few spots. But what he talks about is in his experience playing with people who shoot, par. And he had a couple times when he made a run at it, came pretty close, shooting 72 on a par 70 and things like that. And what he found was that there was nothing. We talked about this before. We use the word, I hate to say boring golf, because to me, it's not boring to shoot par, but right. We've said that before. We reference it as boring golf. But what he says is when he plays it with those type of people, there's nothing particular about what they do that is overtly stunning or eye-catching or whatever. He says it's a very much not like, seeing DJ blast these 240-yard six irons, I think he says, in the air or whatever it may be. So what he had said was, and a lot of times you even see this firsthand, Mike, because you got a chance to play a couple times with the Baltusrol Club champ, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you see sometimes, he's got a really long game that he can play. But one of the driving factors is that they just manage, this is what we talk about boring golf, is just keeping the ball in play. And what they do largely is rather than wowing you with any individual shots, they just work on really eliminating those bad shots. And this is something that made me think when I saw Eric's article, Eric Benzenberg, which I'll also link to his article. He had put a quote in there from Ben Hogan. He said, "Golf is a game of misses. The guy who misses it the best is going to win." In other words, everybody misses. But when you see your scratch players, the big thing that you're going to find as far as a difference is that they don't miss as badly as we do. And I think proof of this concept and proof that this works is when you and I had done the 3-club challenge, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And we challenged you guys out there, you listeners, to do the same. A lot of you did it. A lot of you posted your experience in our Facebook group. And the takeaways are very interesting. It was that even with only 3 clubs in our hand, we shocked ourselves with how well we were able to score. And a big part of that was because we were often by the clubs that we selected are often the clubs that we're most confident in, but they're also clubs that we tend to usually hit well, and not big distance club, but just clubs that were like a 7-iron. We're just relying on just moving that 7-iron down the fairway. And when we did that, we largely were able to eliminate some of those worse shots, some of those really bad shots. And we took this more conservative strategy. And what in this particular video, what he mentions and what he talks about is he says, you know, you keep the ball in play and learn to get very, this is what he said about scratch golfers in particular. They focus, they're like hyper-focused on two things, keeping the ball in play and getting very good up, getting up and down around the greens. So think about it like that. It's so true. If you were just to break down a par four, if you're able to just keep that ball in play somehow, even if you're not hugely long off the tee, just get it in the fairway, give yourself a shot at the green. Even if you miss the green, if you become very good around the green at getting up and down and you don't have a huge miss, you know, like that's, again, that's, if you start to replay your own game in your mind, you'll start to see what I mean about like what really takes us out of those big misses. You'll find that even though it's not the most seemingly exciting thing that's happening, you're just hitting, you know, fairway. And we always talk about this before, small targets and small goals to reach bigger goals. You know, first target, hit the fairway, second target, hit the green, or at least come close enough that you can try to up and down it. And it is such a solid point. And he talks about how score is more determined by your worst shots than your best shots. And an example of this, is he says, let's just break down a really great shot for a second. Let's say you blast your driver off the tee 300 yards and you're in the middle of the fairway, right? The best that's really done for you is set up the chance of a great approach shot. The most it's done is giving you the chance of a great approach shot, but you still have to make an approach shot. You still have got to two putt it, get it in the hole, right? On the other side of it, now let's take the other end of the spectrum. That side of the spectrum is like a perfect drive. The other side of the spectrum is a bad shot. Let's say take it to the approach shot, for example. Let's say on that approach shot, you hit a bad shot that flies the green and ends up in the woods in a hazard. Or maybe not even quite as bad, but you push it way right of the green, you end up buried in a bunker. That shot, that bad shot, is going to most likely cost you probably two more shots at least to right. get that ball moved into the hole. Whereas that good shot didn't necessarily gain you two more shots. All it really did was give you a chance at a good approach shot. Now, I'm not discounting hitting great shots, but what I'm telling you is we are so focused often on, especially we watch the PGA Tour on the weekends and we see this like shots that Rory and Bubba and these guys are pulling off. And we're so focused on learning how to hit that shot that instead, you know, we don't look on just improving our weaknesses, the areas where we're losing strokes. We're so focused on gaining strokes that we're not realizing where we're really losing strokes. The better and the wiser thing might be is to take a look at however you track your statistics. I've talked about how I like using the Arcos system. I know that 18 Birdies is getting better at tracking statistics. I know some people just do a pen and paper, however you want to do it. As you start getting used to tracking your statistics more, another thing we talked about on an episode, the importance of that, you're going to start to identify and uncover areas of your game where you struggle and where you are hitting the majority of these bad shots. If you can get hyper-focused on just that, you're going to start to see some real scoring improvement because you're going to start to eliminate that. So like, for instance, let's say you do struggle with that approach shot, 150 yards and in. Or something like that. And you find that you're scattering it all over the place. You know, sometimes you're pushing it in the water, sometimes you're in the trap, whatever it may be. If you can just work on that and work on eliminating that, you're going to start to see a huge improvement because it'd be a lot easier to, even if you miss smaller, we talk about, again, that quote, like the guys who miss the best, you know, let's say you can make even, you're not going to necessarily get perfect, but you can make your misses a little bit smaller. And now instead of ending up in greenside bunkers on every approach shot, you're ending up on the side of the green, but you're at least on the dance floor. Each time you're giving yourself more and more of a chance. You're giving yourself more and more chance. So instead of always trying to chase making, you know, getting, you know, working on hitting this perfect drive or something like that, you can start to work on these areas. Now, that is not me ruling out you working on your driver. An example of this is me personally. I know that the large part of the difference in my game is how good I am getting off the tee. I've talked about this so many times that I struggle big time with my driver, right? And some of the times when I play really well, what I notice is that my driver's working for me that day. And then the days that my driver's not working for me, that is essentially my big miss. We talk about those are my the bad shots, so to speak. So what I'm finding is that I'm on the one side of it where it's like the real dramatic example would be me pushing it into the woods off the tee and having to, you know, going OB and having to hit three off the tee. Now we're really talking about setting ourselves back. Or even if it's just going a little bit off the green, off the, you know, off the fairway and I'm in the trees and I've got to play a punch recovery shot. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm starting to see that those problems. On the other side of it is when my driver is working for me, even if it's not working dramatically good, I'm not bombing 300 yard drives. Let's say I'm just hitting it 250, but I'm getting it in the fairway. That's when I find that I'm scoring better. So I'm eliminating. So for me, one area of my game to work on, and I see this in when I break down my statistics on Arcos, is driver. But I'm not saying that it would be for everyone. Everyone's going to be different. Right. You just want to identify those areas and get a little bit better. And that's why an example of why I played so well in the three club challenge was because now using my my three iron, which is something I used a four iron in that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
When I use my four iron, it's something I'm more comfortable with than a driver. Also, when I do miss it, it's not carrying as far. I was finding that my misses weren't as bad. So I could just kind of move it along. And I always talk about an experience I had way back playing high school golf when we played with this one guy. He was a young guy. And I remember he's a kid. He was a peanut back then. And he would just beat everybody. But it would be the most boring golf because he would just hit it like literally, I think his max distance was 150 yards, right? But he would just go. And he was like deadly around the greens. And he would just go 150 yards, 150 yards, you know, chip, putt.
Chip, putt,
and then he'd
right.
like... He'd be hitting two shots before you even get to your ball, but then he's carding a lower, you know, score on the ball, and he's crazy. The one who's walking away laughing, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it just shows you, but I'm not telling everybody out there. And the one thing I wanted to spell, I'm not telling everyone to get hyper conservative and only use your seven iron and weave your way around. I just using it more as a point of fact to prove this concept. The concept is, if there's one point to drive home here, it's that the bad shots are going to affect your score more dramatically than a good shot is going to. Hopefully
so
that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I'm writing down notes as you're talking, and I wrote this on a piece of paper. I don't know if you can see this on my screen, Frank. Not everyone out there.
And then fix it. Yep.
Exactly. Right. So I wrote that down. Not tonight. I wrote this down a couple of days ago because it kind of inspired me for a quick article idea, but it seems like Eric kind of took it and ran with it, but I was going to put my own spin on it based on what happened to me on Friday. And you nailed it, man. You pretty much nailed it. My 150, 100 yard game, I don't have the confidence in that game. So instead of me going to the range and just hitting a bucket of balls with my driver, I'm just going to put that away. I'm just going to work on that. I'm going to find a course. And this is the problem for me. I need to find a driving range that's grass. You have one of those, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, turf mats don't cut it for me. I'm a scratch golfer on the turf mat range. I will hit 100 yards every single time right next to the flag on a mat. But you put me out there with real live dirt and real ground, it's a whole different ballgame.
And what
you
does
know?
That
so,
tell you?
What does it tell me?
It tells you that you're if the dirt is the only thing that's making the difference, then you're most likely reaching the bottom of your swing just behind the ball.
Yes. So I'm a digger.
You're a digger, right?
Yeah.
So with the mat, it's not going to be as bad because the mat, it's going to bounce. You're not going to lose as much speed, and you're going to still make contact. Versus with the turf, it's going to slow that thing down dramatically. So I would say there, a big focus is balance. If you are not perfectly balanced in your feet, if you're just a little bit more of your weight shifted towards your right side, that's often, at least for me, that's why I end up bottoming out behind the ball.
Okay, so perfect. So you just dissected it for me. So I should go focus on balance. All right, I pick up on my game, focus on balance, work on those shots because the drives are no problem. They get out there 250, 260, 270. They find the middle of the fairway. That's all great and good, but I hate walking back to my cart, putting the club in the bag and saying, it's disappointing to waste a good drive like that. I say that a lot.
It is disappointing. And that's
something I was
demoralizing too.
Yeah, you know,
you waste those good shots.
You can't be 125 out, 150 out, and walk off with bogey, double bogey. You have to stick those greens. And you know what? I love this idea. I love the idea of finding out what's wrong with your game and then honing in on it and fixing it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's something that unfortunately goes under the radar for so many, you know, newer golfers, but it's a concept that's been around forever. I mean, any golf coach, this is what they're going to start with a few things. They're going to start working on your fundamentals. But then after that, they're going to start to identify areas of your game that need improvement and work on them. We saw just this past week, speaking of Arcos, they released this new thing where you can share your statistics with your coach. I don't know exactly how it works. I haven't tested it myself yet, but basically if it's very similar to it's this Arcos dashboard, but it's similar to the one I use where it'll tell me like, this is my handicap relative to different areas of my game. And I'll see different areas where I'm struggling. You know, for me, it's driver and usually, you know, bunker shots around the green. And then that is something that you would then identify and work on. So that being said, just kind of transitioning really quick, And I'll link to this as well in the show notes and all of these articles, everything we're talking about here, you can check out in the Golficity app as well. But Eric Benzenberg, who writes for us and again does a great job breaking some of this stuff down, he talks about, and the title of his article is your obsession with distance holding you back? And it's a very simple and similar concept to what we're seeing here. And he says it's like for amateur golfers, for some reason, it's as though we feel like, you know, carrying it 300 yards off the tee validates us somehow, validates our status as being a better player among other amateur golfers. But what happens is you end up with like your local club champs and stuff like that. They're guys who aren't necessarily doing anything surprisingly crazy, you know, hitting these Dustin Johnson style drives. It's just guys who just keep the ball in play and are just get really good, you know, at that scoring zone around the greens. And he talks a little bit about, you know, again, a lot of this being prompted by you and I. You know, we had that new video with the Rogue versus the Epic, and the whole point of the video was really because so many people have already reviewed the two clubs and there's so much information out there. We feel like, why duplicate that? The point of the video was really for us to show you guys that newer is not always better and different clubs, you know, fit different golfers and that whole concept. But the comments and everything that started rolling in as soon as we posted our stats were people really getting focused on our swing speeds. And we're and that's where, you know, Eric jumped in and he said, like, this is what we're talking about. We get so laser focused on that we don't, you know, see other parts of the game. And he even broke down some of the PGA Tour stats and that's where swing speed. And we were even surprised when we talked to the fitter, right? Yep. He sees you swinging 110 mile an hour, right? And he says, yeah, most guys on tour don't swing that fast. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at these guys and like, whoa, the tour average is still over 300 yards with their drives. But these guys are working on you know, amazing quality of strike. You know, and that's where we talked about the smash factor being the quality of strike. But there's all different types of things like that go into that, like angle of attack and stuff like that. It's dispersion also that becomes a huge part of it. And what I like, what Eric mentions, and he talks about, like, anybody can kind of do this. You can just, take a look at how you're striking the ball in the club face. There's face tape that you can put on it, or some guys just spray it with, you know, whatever it may be, you know, just a little like powder or something that so you can see it. And then I've seen graphics before when you see guys moving down the spectrum from really high handicappers to low handicappers, you start to see that the ball, the strikes and the ball marks on the club face is getting more and more just in a concentrated center point rather than being all over the face. So he talks about the idea of really trying to work on dispersion, you know, more than anything. And especially, I think this relates largely to driver, you know, where we see so many people like always chasing another 2-3 yards. This one's a little bit longer. I've largely switched my focus with any club that I select and get fitted for or work into my bag. I'm much more concerned with, all right, what's the dispersion on this? Because I know, and it's a great point that Eric makes there, just by tightening your dispersion up a little bit by a couple yards is going to do a lot more than you stretching your distance out another 2 or 3 yards, right? Because that's, again, that's the eliminating the bad shots. That's that dispersion where it's just go all over the place. And, you know, he talks about it and he says about lowering your scores, your handicap. He says, ironically enough, the best way to do that is to play boring golf. Again, the word we use, boring golf. And I think we need to find a more creative label for this, so guys will actually want to pursue it. I think when you're boring golf, guys are like, I'm out here to have fun. I don't want to play boring golf. I want to blast it. But my counterpoint to that is, like, how much fun do you have when you walk into that clubhouse, you know, with a 72 on the card? right? So that's a big thing. So, but it, more so when we say boring golf, we're talking about consistent, low risk, high success shots. If anybody out there has a better label for this that we can start using it, post it in the Facebook group, because I think we can relay, we could do this. We can relabel this something that we all want to achieve. It does mean keeping your ego in check. It means not constantly working on hitting these shots that you see the guys make on TV, whether it be the big bombing drives or these big, great, amazing, like high fades that they're hitting. If instead you just work on just making each day, like focus on making your misses a little bit less bad, you're going to see that's going to really do wonders for your score.
So, yeah. And, you know, I want to just throw point to make. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you just mentioned what's another way we could describe that. Some people call it old man golf. And we kind of bust your old man about it, you know, him being my uncle. But hey, there's an old man golf's game that I would love. That he's shooting low 70s in his 60s. It's phenomenal. So old man golf is for me. I'll take it this season if I could find it.
And he still manages to outdrive me. So yeah, there you go. Too. But he plays smart golf. He knows his way around the course. Sure. I think that's the thing I you get in general from playing with anybody who's more veteran to the game. You start to see that they play much smarter golf. But yeah, see, look at all these things that we've got for it. Boring golf, old man golf. We got to rebrand it. It's got to be rebranded. I think it's going to be like maybe something. Smart golf. Maybe
smooth,
I don't know.
Golf. Chill golf.
Yeah, I don't something. Know. We'll find a smart good name
golf.
For it.
I like smart golf.
But anyway, so that particular video hit home for me because although it's not a new concept, just the way he phrased it, kind of like, I think sometimes when you just hear something put a different way, it kind of drives it home. It really drove it home for me. I will, I'll share that again in the show notes. Like I said, we can go to golfficity.com/episode215, or if you're using the Golfficity app, when you get your alerts for a new podcast, you can click that. All the show notes are right there. And then we'll have that video. We may be able to even just embed it there so you guys can take a look at that. But it is such a strong point, and it's something we made many, many episodes ago where we said, always strive to see if you can. I know it's tough sometimes to lose when you're playing.
Yeah.
But see if you can get paired up with people better than you and learn from them. And if you can get paired up with someone who's a scratch golfer, watch them. Sure, there's going to be certain parts of their game that are just, you know, it's really, they can hit some great shots. But in general, sometimes it's nothing too earth-shattering that they're doing. It's just that they're not missing like we miss. They're not having to play that constant recovery game, that constant punching it out from, because you're blocked out where you are. Oh, you know, don't forget, these course designers are smart. They put bunkers and trees and hazards in landing zones where you're going to go if you're penalized for not hitting, you know, your targets. So that's where, as you can get better at hitting your targets and not, you know, having that dispersion and varying off course where you now have to constantly be recovering, you're going to see huge improvements in your score.
Yeah, no doubt.
So disciplined golf. Maybe we'll call it disciplined golf.
Disciplined golf. Okay.
I don't know. I'm digging that. We'll put a up for vote out there. Smart golf, disciplined golf, or choose your own adventure. Tell me which one it is, you know?
Exactly.
But we'll find a good name for it. But I think that's an important one. All right. That's everything I have. I mean, I've been excited about this topic because I want to get out there and I want to try it. I want to really work on it. We're going to do more of those challenges, those enlightening challenges, like the three club challenge. If you guys didn't get a chance to do it last season when we challenged everybody, get out there. If you're a new listener, do it. Make one round this season be a three club challenge. And I don't even care if you want to do three clubs and then the putter, you know, or if you want to make the putter one of them, so you're two clubs and a putter. I think the concepts are going to be the same. You're going to learn really quickly how that conservative, smart play is going to translate to better scores. So give it a try. Mike, you and I may even do a one club challenge this year.
I think so. We should do that.
That could be an interesting one. So get out there. And you know what? That's a funny thing. My golf coach used to always do that. He used to, when we had our practice rounds, we'd all be out there full bags and he'd just jump on the bus with just his 7-iron. We're like, what's this guy doing? Right. Yep. And then he'd go out there and make it a point to beat us all with just his 7-iron. But he, and of course, with a 7-iron, you're not doing anything earth shattering. You're not doing anything dramatic. You know, he'd be 100 yards behind us off the tee. But then all of a sudden on the next shot, he's catching up. He takes it out there and he can chip it really well. And then now he's right next to the hole. He's putting for par. And we're like,
good golfers can do anything with a 7-iron.
You know?
Uh huh.
So
that's great.
Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of the video, and post those comments for sure in the Facebook group. If you're new, if you're a new listener, you don't know what I'm referencing, go on Facebook, just search The Golf Podcast, search Golficity. You'll see our group pop up. It's a really great growing little group. I think we're closing in on 1,000 members in the group, and everybody is so awesome in there. Really supportive group of guys, and you can kind of, you don't have to be ashamed to post some of your bad rounds, because I find that everybody's really supportive in there. I love that about the group. It's free. Jump in there. We continue the conversation in between episodes. That's everything we have. Like I said, get to the show notes by going to golfficity.com/episode215, and we'll see everybody again next week.